chick flicks, romantic comedies, rom-coms. You love them, you hate them.
But we are here to eviscerate them. Welcome to the Rom-Com Killjoys podcast.
We are your hosts, Eliza Bertram
and Janelle Walker. Now, let's get on with some feminist joy killing. Dating apps, we often say, are a numbers game. But we rarely think of it as a statistical game, trying our luck to find love guaranteed. But our film this week is trying to propose a world where there's a dating app that says, try us out, find love for real. Results are mixed, to say the least. Wouldn't you say, Eliza?
Mixed, definitely. This movie had an interesting take on online dating, I would say.
A bit out of touch, a bit fanciful, but certainly avoidant of the actual issues of online dating, I would say, which we'll get into, I think.
Yeah, it was so strange. I felt like they kept almost getting to some sort of philosophy or thought process about what online dating is like, and then they would just, like, skip right past it.
Mm-hmm.
So we're not going to skip right past it, though. We are going to dive in.
Yeah, I feel like this movie was so sort of, like, Hallmarky awkward that it's making me awkward talking about it. Like, it has a contagious awkwardness. Do you feel this? Are you feeling it?
Yeah, no, I totally understand. I looked up a couple of reviews of this movie just to see, like, what the internet had been saying when it came out last year. And there's not much. I think the internet just had other things to talk about. But on on RogerEbert.com, the reviewer who covered this movie starts their article by saying, "Love Guaranteed is the kind of movie you leave on the TV because you're lying on the couch with a cold and the remote control has fallen off the blanket onto the rug. And you don't feel like going to the trouble to reach down, grab it, and change the channel."
Gosh, I hate how true that is.
It really did feel, it felt like the kind of movie that you'd go, oh, maybe this will be good. And then 10 minutes in, you're like, it's not, but I can't be fucked to change the channel.
Yeah, to be honest, I watched this while I was folding my laundry. So very much on point, RogerEbert.com.
Yeah. So while we're diving in anyway, why don't you tell everyone who didn't turn on this movie what it's about?
Righto. So this week we're talking about Love, comma, Guaranteed, the year of our Lord 2020. Here is your Google summary. Earnest, hardworking lawyer Susan, played by Rachel Lee Cook, has taken one too many pro bono cases. To save her small law firm, Susan begrudgingly takes a high-paying, high-profile case from Nick, played by Damon Wayans Jr., a charming new client who wants to sue a dating website that guarantees users will find love. But Susan and Nick soon find themselves in the middle of a media storm, and as the case heats up, so do their feelings for each other, which could jeopardize everything. I mean, that makes it seem a lot more dramatic than it actually was, but all right, Google, I'll give it to you. So, Eliza, that's what Google says Love Guaranteed is about. But what is it really about?
So, what this movie is about is confusing, because it seems to attempt to make a few different points, and they're all at odds with each other. I think if you asked the writers or the director of this movie what it's about, they'd say that it's about two characters discovering that love isn't a perfect algorithm, except that the court case of the movie ultimately is dissolved because they prove that the algorithm works, even though the two main characters didn't actually use the algorithm. So I'm not totally sure what the thought process was in crafting the argument of this movie, but I believe the initial thesis was, love is not guaranteed. You can't find love through an algorithm.
Right. Which, wow. I mean, it is so funny. It feels sort of like maybe they had two ideas that were competing with each other. Either there was this idea that she was going to get on the dating app and they were going to match and go on one of his, like, thousands of dates, which is, by the way, listeners, what happens. He goes on 1,000 dates to break the guarantee of this corporation. Or they were going to meet by virtue of the case and fall in love that way and thereby prove that you don't need dating apps at all. And so instead they just decided to have it both ways. Which I guess is a play to the middle right now, because it's not taking a stance on this sort of like common and playful debate that people have right now about whether it's better to meet someone in person or meet them on a dating app. And this movie, in straight up Lifetime Hallmark fashion and now Netflix fashion, just decided to say, ¿por qué no los dos?
Yeah, this movie was... It was strange watching this week, because I feel like this is our second one in a row, maybe third one in a row even, that is just completely toothless.
Mm-hmm.
I had a lot of the same thoughts that I had watching last week's movie, which is like, you know, they present the ex-girlfriend, who's the other woman, and she presents no threat to the situation at all. She's perfectly nice. She says nice things to the protagonist, and then she's like, I think you like that girl over there. Go get her. And then she leaves. No real effect on the plot. Their particular work situation gets in the way of their relationship for about a day. Mm-hmm. Just nothing happened. As dumb as the setup is, you could have done a lot with it, you know, right? Like, there's a lot of ways to make this hijinksy, or make it convoluted, or have the two characters not talking to each other about how they're feeling, or have them fight, or have other people get in the way. And just none of that happened. It was sort of like, okay, these two people met through, like, a life thing. And then they started spending time together, and they liked spending time together, and they both acknowledged they liked spending time together. And then for like a day, one of them had doubts, and then the other one declared his love, and then they made out, and then they were together. And that's the whole plot. Like, I'm not simplifying anything.
No, not at all.
And that's so boring.
It is, and it's sad because, as you're saying this, I'm thinking about the broader scope of all of these films being so toothless. It's strange because the tensions present, as you and I both are on the dating apps now, we can attest to this, the tensions present in the culture of dating apps are really juicy. I mean, these questions of commitment versus experimentation, being honest about yourself and being polite. You know, there are all these sort of little nuances that come with meeting someone on a dating app that are extremely complex. And they even allude to this with Nick. I mean, the whole point of his ex-fiance entering the picture in the plot, Ariana, is to present or at least to float the idea that perhaps he wanted to prove that love isn't real.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't really go into that, because by the time that's revealed to us, it's already clear that he's fallen in love with Susan. So...
They built up the ex-fiance so much. There was, like, mm-hmm. intense music and these pauses in the conversation where they're like, oh, we've discovered his ex-fiance. You know, and I thought, okay, so we're going to, like, get into the fact that he kind of went a little nuts after the breakup and was like, I'm going to prove that love's not real and that he's angry and that he's whatever. And then she goes and talks to the fiance and she's like, what happened? And the fiance's like, well, I left him for someone else. And you're like, oh, and then the fiance's mm-hmm. like, but he seems to be doing better now and so am I. And he's like, yeah, I'm glad we broke up. We weren't right for each other. And it was just like, why include that?
Exactly. Because, I mean, the whole notion of how dating apps make people into sort of love nihilists is actually mm-hmm. like an incredibly powerful idea, and you see it all around you, you know, being yeah. our age amongst single people. And I think that that actually is a really profound idea for a rom-com, right? So, like, how would someone have to be, or what circumstances would you have to find yourself in to move you away from love nihilism? Mm-hmm. Would it still be through dating apps? Would it be meeting people in person? Would it be some combination of the two? You know, and this movie just like dodged it, I guess, because maybe it's too complicated and it doesn't have the same sort of tidy plot structure that a rom-com like this kind of demands.
You know, it's interesting. There were a couple moments in the movie where someone said something that did make me think, but not because of what like then happened in the plot, just because it sort of sent me off on a word association journey in my mind.
Mm.
But early on, when Susan is talking to all of Nick's, like, the girls that he's gone on these 900 blah, blah, blah dates with. And, you know, she's trying to, like, get the inside scoop. And from a legal standpoint, it's ridiculous because it becomes very quickly that he went on all of these dates to prove that it wouldn't be love. So, like, they've lost their case, whatever. But she's talking to one of them and says, like, why didn't it work out? And the girl said, I could get this vibe from him. Like, he thinks that he's looking for love, but he was really there to prove that it's not real. Or that it's not going to work or something like that. And I thought that was actually a really interesting insight, because I felt a little called out by that, because I feel like half the time when I open a dating app, I'm going in with negative expectations. You know, right? Like, sometimes I'm going and I'm looking for a date or I'm looking for, you know, to find a connection. But a lot of times I'm like, okay, let's see what losers have swiped on me today, you know, or like, ugh, let's see what the least annoying message is that I got, or, ugh, I don't know, I guess this guy's good enough. Maybe I'll try to match with him, right? Like, there's a lot of that sort of attitude when I go to a dating app frequently, and I definitely have friends who have said similar things. And I feel like because you get kind of stuck into the cogs of this it's all a numbers game mindset, you can get a little prejudgy about it, and then it's kind of self-sabotaging. And that would have been a really interesting thought process to pursue in the movie. And I feel like the groundwork for that was there, either as a fight between the two of them about what they both believe in, or a fight between him and the ex-girlfriend, or as, like, the legal argument, right? Because the lawyer could have gotten up there and been like, it is so clear that this man was not actually trying to use our services the way they're intended, and that's why it didn't work for him. And they just, like, never really go into that conversation, which is disappointing because it would have been way more interesting.
Well, especially because Susan, on the other side of things, represents this sort of, like, naivete to dating apps, because somehow she has managed, as a woman who I assume is in her late 30s, early 40s, has managed to never use a dating app in the last 20 mm-hmm. years, which I find highly implausible. But,
She's also apparently never spoken to anyone who's used a dating app.
I know, the fact that she doesn't know what ghosting is, I just kept thinking, like, wild. Come on, this woman listens to NPR. You can't tell me she's not paying right. attention. I mean, I guess she's not listening to NPR because the only tape in her car is I Think We're Alone Now by Tiffany. So maybe she doesn't listen to NPR. But, yeah, I mean, she could have sort of represented this questioning person who believes that love is not something that you can force. It's not something you can put an algorithm into. It's something that just has to happen to you. They could have had that balance, that tension between the mm-hmm. two of them. And then, you know, they could have found some sort of interesting middle ground, I think, maybe. It still wouldn't say anything about dating apps, really, at the end of the day. It's maddening to me that the earlier movies we were watching were so excited to talk about what love could look like through dating websites, you know? Mm-hmm. What would that connection look like? What are the nuances and then the trickiness of those kind of relationships? But it's almost like dating apps have become so pervasive now, they're like the standard for meeting someone, that movies don't want to talk about what it's mm-hmm. like to meet someone on a dating app because it's just too pedestrian, which is odd and kind of scary.
Yeah, I mean, the interesting thing about this is that her sister, who's the sort of best friend stand-in, says that she met her husband on a dating app. And they've got a kid who's, like, 5. So that was, you know, several years ago. And then the non-threatening but supportive, happily married gay guy coworker, which is a very specific trope that we've now seen many times.
Yeah, in these movies, specifically. Weird.
It's, like, so specific. It's so weird. But he makes a comment about the fact that he got engaged to his husband very quickly after they started dating, and the implication is they met on a dating app and he was so tired of dating apps that he was like, oh, I like this one, let me grab him, right? So, like, all these people around her have experienced love through a dating app, but we explore none of those relationships. They're just sort of stated as facts and then we move right past them, and we don't see any of the actual emotional trauma that can come from struggling to find love through a dating app through either of our two main characters. You just see them being like, ah, dating apps are dumb. And then in the end, they're like, thank God for this dating app. And there's no middle ground. There's no transition. It's just so surface in a way that I find particularly odd, because apparently in an interview, the two writers of this movie said that they both found their partners through a dating app. And it feels like it's being written by a 78-year-old man who's never seen one.
Well, but maybe like, hearing you put it in the way that you just did makes it almost seem like this movie accidentally encapsulates the maddening contradictions of being on dating apps, right? This idea that, like, you hate it, but you have to do it, but it makes you hopeful, but also it makes you hate the human race at the same time. Like, that is a feeling that I feel so strongly. And this movie isn't saying that, but it's doing it somehow.
Right, so, like, the movie's supposed to give you the same feeling you get when you're frustrated with a dating app.
Yeah, totally, and I'm sure that's on purpose, and I'm sure that this film will be looked back upon as, you know, the movie of the moment. It will be studied in film schools. Absolutely.
So on that note, as much as I know you're saying that facetiously, I'd like to talk about the tropiness of this movie. Because obviously this movie is a particular genre. It's trying to build off of that like Lifetime Hallmark style movie, which Netflix is trying to get more into. I feel like they're like, okay, well, every once in a while I'll give you like one decent rom-com movie, and then we'll give you like a ton of shitty ones, and we'll hope that you just kind of watch so many of them that you forget the difference. But even within that, for a movie which came out in 2020, which is about a very modern aspect of relationships and dating and love, this movie was such a classic tropey rom-com, and not in a good way. It genuinely, it took me out of it because I was like, what year was this made in? I mean, it literally, it had, you know, the like uptight workaholic spinster who like just can't have it all and eats Chinese food endlessly out of her fridge, but her hair and makeup and clothes are always fucking perfect. And I was like, I've seen this Sandra Bullock movie before. It was so one-dimensional, and it felt like such a 2003 kind of main character.
Yeah, that is a really good point.
I feel like we've moved slightly past this in other rom-coms that we've watched and talked about on this podcast. Like, even the ones that are still sort of use the stereotypes that are inherent to the genre, I still feel like we've moved into at least, like, women who are maybe two-dimensional.
Yeah, God willing, you know? And yet, yes, I mean, it's almost laughable, Rachel Lee Cook's character in this film. She orders a week's worth of Chinese takeout every weekend so she doesn't have to order or cook anything again for the rest of the week, which, like, okay, I saw Gilmore Girls too. I get it, right? Like, fine. But it is sort of distressing that we can't get past it. I mean, for a minute, though, I kept thinking, well, maybe Love Guaranteed is, like, trying to be the straight-up rom-com version of A Christmas Prince, where it's, like, so tropey that it's almost uncanny valley. Like, it's incredibly self-aware of its tropiness. But it didn't quite go far enough in that direction for me, because, as we've discussed at length, The Christmas Prince is straight-up unsettling in its tropiness. But this movie, it's more like it gives you this feeling of, like, not only the tropiness, but also the plot itself. It's sort of like, surrender yourself to the tropes of the genre. Surrender yourself to the dating apps. Just give in. Just give in.
It was like the people making this movie felt like you can't put anything with more substance into a romantic comedy.
Yes.
Which, as a fan of the genre, I just find to be a really disappointing stance. Because I think that that's just not true. And, you know, I think what you're saying about it almost having that Christmas Prince vibe, what I think is the sort of dividing line between those two feelings is actually the visuals of this movie were higher quality. The sets were fairly well done. The camera work was decent. The shots were well lined up. You know, right? Like, it was like, okay, so a professional director directed this, but maybe not one who's ever worked with actors, because all the actors are giving you just, like, the most stale performances of their careers. And again, yeah, like, fairly talented, successful, long-running actors in this movie who just phoned it in. And the script is terrible. It was like they gave it to a production company and said, make it like it's a real legit rom-com, but we're going to give you a script we wrote in a day and a half, and we're not going to prep any of the actors on what their personalities should be.
Yeah, I agree. It just feels like a very lazy effort. Like,
yeah,
there are so many ways in which it's not even just the laziness of having this like lovely container for some really boring writing, but it's also like there's some contemporary stuff that I would expect in any rom-com after 2015 or so. Like, for example, the CEO of Love Guaranteed, the
Oh, Gwyneth Paltrow?
The dating app. Yes, Gwyneth Paltrow, played by Heather Graham. She's obviously being set up as this, like, Gwyneth Paltrow send-up, but also she's saying things that we're supposed to see as, like, problematic, racist, white lady shit. But very few people in the movie actually call her on that, and then the film doesn't also, like, make a connection, really, between that part of her persona and the fact that she made a dating app at all, which I was kind of right, waiting for it to do. Like, I kind of felt like, well, this is sort of funny, I guess, but, like, Gwyneth Paltrow doesn't have a dating app, and if she did, I would think it would be a lot more interesting than what they're saying about Love Guaranteed.
Yeah.
Like, what do you think about that?
I found that so weird, too, because I think what their thought process was in writing this particular aspect of the story is they were like, oh, a dating app. It's got to be like a cool, hip startup. It's got to have a funky office. Okay, so then it should have a really out-of-touch CEO. Okay, let's make her this crazy Gwyneth Paltrow send-up. Except that there's a disconnect there because the Gwyneth Paltrows of the world are not the ones who are making dating apps. I can't think of a single dating app that I know what larger company or what particular CEO owns them, because that's just not... They're not branded in that way. They're not the apps that have that kind of a vibe. And so you go into this movie and it's like they're trying to do what like Parks and Rec did with Grizzle, right? Where it's like a big Google send up. But like Parks and Rec created something that was like Google or Amazon and then made a bunch of jokes about the people who run Google and Amazon. And this created an app that is like Tinder or Bumble or Coffee Meets Bagel, OkCupid, blah, 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 and then gave us someone who's a Gwyneth Paltrow goop-type personality, and they felt like they were from two different stories.
Well, exactly, and it almost seems like they're applying the internal logic of rom-coms to the real world of dating apps, right? Where like, okay, yeah, I guess if I had rom-com logic, I would think that the people making dating apps would be single white women in their 40s.
Right.
But of course, in truth, the people making dating apps for the most part are probably these like tech bros who just want to make a buck, right?
Right.
And in a way, making the leader, the creator of a dating app into like a single white woman who just believes in love is way less interesting than the actual truth, which is these people marketing and making a millions off love.
Yeah, that's way darker. But I feel like you could even use the internal rom-com logic and be like, okay, so she's this celebrity, she just believes in love, and she's a single white 40-something female, and then she falls in love with her lawyer. And then there's a big scandal because she and her celebrity husband are getting a divorce, and that's actually what takes down the dating app. You know, like, there could have been some other element to make her more interesting. And again, they had an actress who could have done a lot with it because Heather Graham's a very funny actress. And they didn't think past the initial, like, oh, this will be a funny idea.
Yeah, that's a good point. Like, what is it about Nick and Susan, this lawyer, that is really supposed to be a good pairing anyway? Like, I'm realizing now that I think about it, like, they have good chemistry, the two of them together. Mm-hmm. It works. But what brings them together? The fugitive?
That they're able to maintain adult conversations with each other, which apparently neither one of these people has ever done with a single other person their age they've ever met.
And I mean, like, it's so awful because when you say that, there's part of me that, like, that's like, yeah, that's right, Eliza. Like, people have all good kinds of adult conversations all the time. And then I remember some of the messages that I've gotten on dating apps.
Right. I mean, the ability to hold a conversation with someone you go on a date with from a dating app is definitely, like, a bare minimum standard for getting a second date.
Yes. But I would hope so.
How small is this woman's world that she was like, he can discuss movies and music. I'm in love. He was nice to my nephew.
But of course, again, internal rom-com logic, men who know how to do things with children, hot.
Gotta fuck them.
Every damn time they have to give the male lead a moment with a kid. And it's always like something so basic. And then the woman's like, wow, swoon. You know what I mean? It's just reactionary and it's so old and crusty and I hate it.
That was this whole movie, though. I kept being like, I've seen this scene, I've seen this trope, I've heard this dialogue, and even in shitty movies, I've seen it done better. You hit it on the nose when you called it lazy. This whole thing felt so lazy. The other thing, going back to that whole internal logic just being so all over the place, when they were visiting the startup dating app office, they kept going back to this point that the people in all of their ads were clearly models, and I just wasn't sure what the point of this discussion was, because, like, of course they're models. It's an ad. Like, in the year of our Lord 2020, are we really shocked to discover that the pretty people in ads aren't actually people using those products? Like, that should not be revelatory.
It really shows how this movie is trying so hard to make it seem like they're portraying how jaded everyone is with dating apps. But actually, the idea that they are surprised that this dating app is lying to them about dating is so adorable, because everyone I know who's on dating apps, as you said earlier, is incredibly jaded and views the whole thing as a futile exercise that will likely not work out. So it's like, it is hilariously out of touch.
You're so right. They don't feel jaded at all. They feel unbelievably naive by writing all of these things where they're like, I don't believe that that's true. Instead of making it seem jaded, they seem as if they just were birthed from the womb yesterday.
Well, and the sex element of it, too, is very... It's all very, very chaste, also, which I find interesting. Because, of course, one of the most tense things about dating apps is always the question of, okay, well, are you looking for love or are you looking for sex? And the,
right.
this movie doesn't even get close to that question, which... Screenwriters, let's do that movie. I want to see the Is It Love or Is It Sex movie. I want to see that.
Yeah.
Come on.
I mean, that's what every interaction on a dating app is, right? Like, yes. All of your conversations are really just you trying to suss out if the person's looking for a hookup or looking for a long-term thing, and then figuring out which one of those you're looking for to see if you match up. And the fact that none of these movies touch on it is so wild to me. And in this movie, the two of them, as you said, have pretty good chemistry because, you know, they're attractive actors who are good at acting opposite other attractive actors. And then their final kiss was the most sexless thing I have ever seen.
I know. It was just...
You can both do better than that. I know this to be true.
It's the same thing that happens with Christmas Prince in a sense where I feel like, just try a little bit harder. Just give us some kind of payoff. A little bit.
Right? I just need a payoff.
One single payoff. Give me a payoff. Wait, but sorry, can we also go back to, let's think about this plot through the eyes of Nick's dates. Because we see some of them in the courtroom give testimony.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, if you found out that you went out on a date with a guy who is going out on 3 dates a day, every day, to win a lawsuit, what would you say about that man, Eliza?
Well, for starters, I will have already wasted an hour of my life on this man. Let's not even get into how much I wouldn't want to bother appearing in that courtroom.
Yeah.
And then for them to be like, do you think he was sincere? I don't think a single man I've ever interacted with on a dating app is sincere. I certainly wouldn't think that of one I found out had been on 1,000 dates in 1.5 years and then was taking me to court.
Right. I feel like the realistic response from these women would have been like going to their girlfriends in the group chat, right? Like, in all caps, just found out that weird guy I went out on a date with a few months ago was going out on 3 dates a day and is now suing the dating app company. What a fuck boy.
Oh my God. Can you imagine that group chat? That's the other thing that I just across the board think that we have not seen a realistic portrayal of in any of these movies or in any movies we've watched so far, which is the modern dating storyline should also come with the modern group chat.
Oh, well, absolutely. Absolutely, absolutely.
You know, the closest I think we've gotten to something like that is in You've Got Mail. After every single thing that happens in Kathleen's love life, she then goes back to the store and the 3 coworkers do honestly respond the way we tend to respond in group chats. It's still spoken because it's still the, you know, mid-90s, but I feel like that at least had the right energy. And when I'm thinking across, like, all the other movies we've watched, I feel like none of them really incorporate that part of the dating process, which at least in my experience is such a large part of the dating process.
Absolutely. I mean, it's an essential part of it now. You know, I was thinking about this around Christmas, the last Christmas, when Bridgerton and Indian Matchmaker were both kind of big on Netflix at the time. I was thinking about that maybe the appeal of those movies is that it has this like formal, rigid dating structure to it, which is kind of reassuring in a sense, right? Like it's always pretty clear who is interested in you because that is a formalized process. Whereas with dating apps, as we just discussed, it can be so maddening where even if someone swipes on you, do they like you?
Are they just attracted to you? Was their interest piqued by something in your profile? Did they accidentally swipe? Are they swiping on every 3rd person that they see? And even then when you go on the date, did they like it? Did you like it? Are you going to go out again? When should you text them? Should you not text them? Should you follow them on Instagram? Should you Google them and find their LinkedIn and figure out where they work?
And that, all of that sort of ambiguity and figuring out what a person's actual intentions are, what their level of seriousness is, what their level of interest is, requires an absolute dating by committee system. And that is what we do now.
Janelle, just hearing you talk through that made me need a Xanax.
Me too. Where's my wine?
Like, this is so stressful. And none of these stories touch on that, which is too bad because there's so much potential for comedy there.
Oh, God, yes.
And, like, this is one of the many examples that we've looked at on this podcast that, like, while technically a rom-com in that it fits the genre, has no actual element of comedy anywhere in here. And there's so much potential for comedy without even really needing to dig into it in that kind of dating by committee, modern, virtual dating life. Like, why would you not tap into that?
But I feel like it's, like, the kind of tension, right, that I feel like is with modern dating and dating apps. It's like, you never know what to do, but there's a million people telling you what to do. And because there are a million people telling you what to do, you have no idea what to do. And I think it has a lot to do with social media, right? Social media is so... It makes us so constantly self-surveilling, always thinking about whether we're doing the right thing that's going to play well to our quote-unquote audience. That when we date people, inevitably, one of the things in the back of our minds is, well, what is everyone else going to think about this? Like, is this person the person for me and my brand? You know, on some level, that's part of it. And it's not just about, like, meeting someone who you click with. Because what if the person you click with is not textbook, you know? Like, what if they're not, you know, fulfilling the 15 ways he should be treating you, ladies, if he's the one, according to Bustle.com?
Right. I mean, everything about our lives is so performative today in a modern world. And that feels weird to say, because I feel like people in the past also lived performative lives. Like, we as a generation didn't invent that. But there's no downtime, right? Because even when you're not around anyone, you're online, you're on social media, you're home alone in your apartment, and you're looking at Facebook and Instagram and TikTok and Twitter and blah, 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 right? Like, you never get away from that performative moment, because at any moment, you can be performing. Yeah. At any moment, you can make a post. At any moment, you can send a tweet. You can text your friends with a funny comment in response to their current conundrum in the group chat, right? And so we have to be on all the time, and we see everyone else on all the time. And it's a lot of information going into your head, and it is hard to parse through that.
Mm-hmm. And it also, I think, when you integrate things like meeting someone off of a dating app and then following them on Instagram, right? Then you get into these questions too, which are kind of interesting. Am I more interested in the person when they're not performing, or am I interested in the person when they are performing? Is there a difference, you know? And also for myself, right? Like, is the person that I'm presenting on dating apps the person who I am when I'm alone in my apartment? I don't know.
Right.
I don't know. Not all the time.
Yeah, I mean, I think when we are constantly surrounded, again, by this performative space where everyone is putting their best selves forward on social media, you then spend a lot more time thinking about who you are and who you are projecting to other people. And, you know, I think just it's normal to have days where you feel good about yourself and days where you feel bad about yourself, days where you're more outgoing, days where you're more introverted. But when you feel the need to brand yourself publicly, then you spend a lot of your personal time either trying to fit that brand or trying to figure out what your brand is, because you feel like that is how you define yourself.
Yeah,
see? Yeah, we're getting deep here, folks.
No, but I'm just thinking, like, see, now that as a conflict in this movie, or in any movie, would be so interesting to watch, right? Because it's not even a conflict just between you and your partner, but also a conflict between you and yourself. Oh, that'd be so good. And there's nothing like that in this movie. Like, they don't get into any of these juicy nuances. And it's just, it's sad. I mean, and I guess they're avoiding the pain of what dating apps can bring into your life. And fair enough. Like, I get it. But
they're also avoiding the discussion.
Yeah.
You know, right? Like, they don't get into it at all. And one of the things that we haven't really touched on, because it is so freaking dumb in this movie, is the legal battle.
Oh, God, yeah.
Which, I mean, it's so dumb in this movie. Neither side has a leg to stand on in the way they're making their arguments. It comes to nothing. It has no stakes, because they end up giving up on it at the end, spoiler alert, and it doesn't really negatively affect anyone. Like, it's totally pointless. But as a film and as a genre, the legal battle, the courtroom scene, can be such a powerful element of a plot. And there are so many great courtroom movies, and there are a whole handful of great courtroom rom-coms, because you can really use it as a place to, you know, hash out these arguments, to let people's emotions fly, to reveal information, to, you know, to dig into this, to create conflict. And so there's a lot of juicy stuff you can get out of turning a story into a courtroom drama. And this movie, I was like, I don't even know why it's a courtroom drama. Like, it added nothing.
Yeah, I mean, they really could have just done the discovery phase of the legal process. And it would have been totally, you know, satisfying. Like, their final confrontation or his final declaration could have been back at the corporate offices for Love Guaranteed, mm-hmm. right? When she was, like, ending the arbitration or something, you know? So at least then all the characters could be rounded up in a pleasing way. Yeah, right. I agree.
Well, and, you know, if you're going to give me a courtroom scene, I need the courtroom moment. Right? Like, yeah. I need the Legally Blonde moment where they figure out that she couldn't have gotten a perm that day. I need the, you know, my cousin Vinny, it couldn't have been this car because the tracks are wrong moment. You know, right? Like, you need a moment where information is dropped and everyone reacts. Or the big final speech in Mockingbird or whatever, mm-hmm. right? Like, you need a moment where the lawyer gets up and makes such an impassioned plea that everyone is emotionally affected by it. You need that moment in Pleasantville where everyone literally starts turning colors in the middle of the courtroom. There's no reason to have the courtroom scene if it's just another room where you can have a discussion that could have happened in any other room.
Yeah, it's so silly because I feel like Susan could have had a lot of careers. Like, it didn't have to have her be a lawyer, really. Mm-hmm. She could have been a journalist doing an interest piece on a guy who's gone on 1,000 dates. She could have been a girl he went on one of these dates with and just got interested in it, you know? But instead, I think in a way, like, her being a lawyer, unfortunately, it was really just an opportunity for this film to show, like, a successful career woman who prioritizes her career right. over love, and here she is alone eating Chinese in her apartment, which...
When she called him late at night on Friday and he figured out she was still working and he was... shocked to his core.
She's like literally an attorney though. Like,
honestly. I was like, have you not met other people?
Right.
Like, you're telling me you've been on 1,000 dates and not one of those women sometimes worked on the weekends? Everything about this movie, no one thought past writing the line down. There was no second thought. Everything they wrote down, they were like, I'm sure that's perfect. Moving on.
Perfect example of this is when he calls her from the car and he's like, hey, are you free tonight? I got a DVD of The Fugitive. I mean, I don't know why I have a DVD. Do you have a DVD player? I don't. Anyway. And I just thought, was that the first draft of this line? And they just, like, never even used the backspace button? They just were like, you know, stream of consciousness, writing a line. Cool. Great. It was just so, so hilarious. So hilariously transparent.
That line could have worked if he was a sort of stream of consciousness type guy the whole movie. But he wasn't. No. So clearly someone just wrote that down and was like, this is a funny piece of dialogue. Let's find somewhere to include it. Doesn't matter if it sounds like it came from a different character.
See, it's if fine. John Cusack said it, I would have been like, yep, this is something John Cusack would do. Because it's
absolutely.
John Cusack. And listeners, let's be very clear. If you go out on 1,000 dates and you go out on 3 dates a day, I don't care how nice you are to people. That makes you a fuck boy, a capital F, capital B, fuck boy. And the fact that this movie just, like, glosses over it, the movie just is like, no, that's you know, he did it for the lawsuit. It's like, okay, but that still means that there were hundreds of women that he, like, rejected, which is not kind.
Right. Also, this is the only thing he has done with his time.
Yeah.
Because he's only been doing this for like 1.5 years or whatever. And so he's literally gone on 3 dates, almost a day, the entire time. So he has no friends. He has no social life beyond this. He never eats dinner in his apartment. He has no extra money because he has spent it all on dates at this fancy restaurant. This man is psychotic.
Yeah, exactly. And also you would immediately be like, red flag. Not even just a red flag. A red banner, a complete, like, red wall between you and this guy.
That's a big red flag.
Because the thing is, like, it doesn't matter if your intentions are pure if you're still treating people like they're not real people. If you're just treating them as a means to an end. That's not kind or ethical. It's just bad. It's just really bad. So listeners, if you're out there going on 1,000,000 dates just to, you know, prove a point or something... stop it. Stop it. That's not nice.
Yeah, and this is not to disparage someone who's been on a lot of dates.
No, I've been on a lot of dates. Someone who's
been on a pathological number of dates.
Yeah, and it's about like how you treat people, right? If you're literally treating them as like, check off, I did my evening Monday date, you know, and I've documented her and I don't need to come back. That's messed up. It's not kind.
You know, and again, in the courtroom, they keep almost getting to this conversation of what was the purpose of these dates and what was he like on the dates. And so, you know, they bring in all the girls to be like, no, he was really nice on the dates, which somehow proves that he was taking them seriously, I guess. Except that it also proves that he literally did the exact same thing on every single date. Like he was checking off a list. And I feel like if you were having a legal battle about this, that would be a pretty good case that he, like, wasn't trying to make personal connections with these women.
Yep.
But instead of taking that away from it, they're all like, oh, no, it's fine. He's a nice guy. Which, again, this movie was written by women. That is such a weird take.
I hate it.
Why?
This is the time every week when we stop to thank our patrons on Patreon, and very especially our romantic leads, who are Bob, Esther, Ian Trey, and Melissa. I mean, my love for y'all is guaranteed. 1,000%.
If you want to guarantee that this podcast keeps happening, you can become a Patreon as well by going to patreon.com/romcomkilljoys. You can also show support for us by following us on whatever platform you use to listen to your podcasts, and by following us on Facebook and Instagram at romcomkilljoys. Okay, so this movie was real dumb. Janelle, please give me something even a modicum more interesting and intelligent.
I got you. So I'm actually pretty proud of my anecdotes this week. I have one that's really dumb, but potentially philosophically interesting. Great. And one that is actually artistically significant and that I actually genuinely like. Okay, here's the dumb one. So if you are like me and enjoy all manner of truly vapid reality television, you probably already know that there is a show on HBO Max called Fuckboy Island. Now, I'm going to have to urge you to see Fuckboy Island. Here is why. Everything that this movie does not go into about how much of a mindfuck dating apps are, Fuckboy Island encapsulates it. Not in a dialogue. It doesn't speak to it. It does it. The concept of the show is you have three women, accomplished, beautiful, trying to find love on an island with 24 men at first. 12 of the men are self-identified, and this is important, self-identified nice guys, and 12 of them are self-identified fuckboys. The fuckboys are there to win a cash prize. The good guys are there to supposedly find love. Now, what I love about this as a facade is that the facade itself encapsulates everything that is wrong with straight men, mostly on dating apps, right? They're going to be fuckboys of all genders, but specifically straight men have a real problem with this. That the fact that these men get to self-identify as fuckboys or as nice guys, and yet I guarantee you when you watch the show, you will see that the self-identification means literally nothing. It will ruin your faith in humanity, but you will also laugh a lot. Right. Go check that out. And then, I don't know, send me a DM on Instagram or something and we can talk about it because, good Lord. Here's the thing I actually want to recommend, though. Longtime listeners of the podcast know that one of my favorite playwrights is Leslie Headland. And while we forgive her for the travesty that was The Bachelorette movie, I want to recommend her other romantic comedy, which is called Sleeping with Other People. Mm-hmm. It's a 2015 film starring Jason Sudeikis and Alison Brie as these people who are having very contemporary, super interesting, really juicy romantic problems, you know, just like the ones that we talked about that this film completely avoids. Jason Sudeikis plays a sex addict, and Alison Brie plays a woman who's been in a very long-time toxic affair with a man who's in another closed relationship. So they both kind of recognize their commitment issues by becoming friends and discussing them and vowing not to sleep with each other, no matter what. They even have a safe word. Of course, hijinks ensue. But it's really worth watching as an exploration of some of the complex dating issues that arise in a world where things like monogamy or marriage or long-term partnership are not always on the table for people. And it actually, you know, explores some interesting ways you can be in love anyway. So yeah, I recommend Fuckboy Island and sleeping with other people. It's a very slutty list, and I'm happy with that. Eliza, what do you got?
I love your slutty list.
Thank you.
This week, I couldn't get past how pointless it was to make this a courtroom drama. So I was like, I think I have to recommend another courtroom drama that is better. And, I mean, there are a lot of examples of this, many of which we mentioned earlier in this episode, and many of which we have already used in the past as antidotes. But the one I'm going to suggest this week is, instead of watching something modern, go all the way back to 1949 and watch the movie Adam's Rib. Adam's Rib stars the great Katharine Hepburn and Spencer Tracy as a married couple who are both lawyers back in the 40s, so like that's a big deal because not a lot of lady lawyers back then, and they end up on opposite sides of a trial. The trial concerns a feuding couple, and the two of them take sides and then begin to feud at home as a result of this trial in which they are professionally fighting one another. And it is funny, and it is smart, and there's chemistry between the leads, and you believe their relationship, and you believe the fight. And it's excellent. It's a really good time, and it's one of, I feel like, the Katharine Hepburns that doesn't get talked about as often, even though it's just as good as everything else she's ever done. So definitely check out Adam's Rib.
Ugh. So much lost potential in this movie.
So it could much have been potential. Great. It could have been fine.
It could have been fine. And it was not fine.
Like, I'm not always looking for, you know, a deep feminist dive into modern cultural criticism when I'm turning on a Netflix rom-com. Like, really, I'm totally okay with it being fine.
That's what Netflix should change its rating system to. Like, no stars, just fine or not fine. I would like that.
Or maybe one of the categories is would watch while drunk, which I feel like would be my rating for a lot of the Netflix Christmas ones.
Yes, it should be like reacts on Facebook or something, like a thumbs up, thumbs down, beer mug emoji, heart eyes emoji for like watch it on a date.
Yeah, I like this. We should suggest this to Netflix. I think it's really going to improve their algorithm.
I agree. Hire us, Netflix. We're available and single.
Hey, call us.
We're doing a lot of hitting on people in this month of episodes.
Thank you for listening to the Rom-Com Killjoys podcast. If you liked what you heard, be sure to follow us on Facebook and Instagram.
If you'd like to support us further, you can become a patron at patreon.com/romcomkilljoys.
Our theme song is Lady Slut Hitchhike Love by the band A Giant Dog, and the song you're listening to now is a cover of Baby Love by Colin Langaness.
Remember, Killjoys, don't let anyone kill your joy.
Not a rom-com. Not us.
Not anyone.
See you next time.
Instead of breaking up, it starts in kissing and making.